This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
I'm not going to go too much into the details. I just want to provide a little bit of a high-level overview of kind of what's coming for patients with advanced prostate cancer, because there's so much out there, and I think we're very likely to see more drug approvals coming here in the next couple of years and beyond. And just gives you a sense of the timeline. And if you look at the FDA drug approvals in prostate cancer, you can see the acceleration in the number of approvals has really dramatically increased in the last 10 years. Go back to the days of docetaxel in 2004 to where we are now, just a tremendous amount of drug discovery and drug development, a lot of which UCSF has had a direct hand in, but many more, you know, across the globe. It's just been remarkable to see, and I think a lot more to come here in the next 5 years. So I'm gonna really talk about two themes. One is drugs that target something on the cell surface of the cancer cell. And we talked a lot about PSMA. I'll show you that there are a lot more promising targets beyond PSMA, and I think that's where we're focused a lot of our attention on. Can we find other targets to really treat with different ways to attack the cancer cell once we have a good target? I'll talk about this concept of antibody drug conjugates. It's like a more precise way to give chemotherapy. Dave O touched upon our bispecific T cell engagers. I'll talk a little bit about that. And then Ivan did a great job talking about radioligand therapy. There's a lot more coming beyond lutetium and PSMA. And then secondly, I'll just talk a little bit about the androgen receptor. We don't want to forget about this. This testosterone receptor is still the central driver of prostate cancer growth. And there are many new ways being tested beyond abiraterone, enzalutamide, darolutamide, which do a good job of blocking the testosterone receptor, but don't perfectly block it down to a zero activity level. We'll talk a little bit about that. So just touching upon, well, what makes a good cancer cell surface target? It seems kind of obvious, but there's actually a lot that goes into it, because there's a lot of different ways you can look for a target. And there could be great targets on the cancer cell, but if they don't have that specificity, meaning only on the tumor cell, not or minimal expression in the normal tissues of the body, we're always looking for what we call that wide therapeutic index. We want a lot of expression on the tumor, minimal to zero expression elsewhere in the body. Does that target go back and forth between the cell surface and inside the cell? If we're giving something that attaches to that target, we want it to be internalized to deliver that payload to kill that cancer cell. Can it, as a secondary byproduct or directly, stimulate the immune response? So can it directly kill the cancer cell, but also stimulate the immune cells to kill the cancer cell? That kind of cascading effect is what we really think can drive a deep and durable response. And it has to be targetable. You have to be able to find some way to attach your drug to that cell surface target, whether that's an antibody or a small molecule or something in between. There are a lot of promising targets beyond PSMA in the center circle. You can just look at some of those. CD46 is a target we've developed here at UCSF, B7H3, STEAP1, that's the target for the xaluritamig that Dave O showed, TROP2, DLL3, that might be a target more for what we call neuroendocrine types of prostate cancers. KLK2, you're gonna hear more about that. That's similar, but not identical to PSA and PSMA. So a lot happening in the drug development space here. So just talking for just a sec about antibody drug conjugates, it's really you take your antibody, whatever binds to the target, you have a linker, and that linker is important, and then you have your payload, which is usually some type of potent chemotherapy that would be cause too many side effects if we gave it by itself. But when we attach it to the antibody and really personalize and get it individualized into those cancer cells with minimal fall off of that chemo payload in circulation, you can really deliver in a potent treatment right to the cancer cell. And there are a number of what we call ADCs or antibody drug conjugates in the clinic that I think are likely to impact patient outcomes in prostate cancer. They're already FDA approved in other cancers. And I think it's very likely to come soon in prostate as well. Dave talked about the T-cell engagers. What I'll say there is just there's so much happening with ways to try to quiet down that initial immune response. One of the challenges with these drugs is they're so effective at stimulating the immune system. We have to monitor patients in the hospital for the first couple of doses with this because it can cause a lot of fevers, low blood pressure. There are a lot of interesting engineering techniques being developed to try to dampen down that response, yet still maintain that anti-tumor immunity. But broad concept, you're trying to attach, like Dave said, a glue to the T cells and to the cancer cells, bring them together and achieve a deep response. This just shows you the waterfall plot from the drug that Dave mentioned, xaluritamig. It's not to say this is the only one, but I think it's pretty far along in clinical development. Each column is an individual patient, and that shows the max percent change from baseline in their PSA, which is admittedly just a marker, but a pretty reliable one of assessing a drug's activity. This is a pretty impressive waterfall plot for patients that were pretty heavily pretreated. You know, the vast majority of patients had at least some PSA decline, and PSA 90 response, which means more than a 90% reduction in baseline, you can see was achieved by quite a number of patients. These responses also seem to be durable. We've had some patients on this clinical trial here at UCSF that have done well for quite some time. Doesn't mean that we're necessarily achieving cure, but these are deep and durable responses. And I think we're excited about some of the follow-on studies with this drug. I touched upon DLL3. Neuroendocrine prostate cancer is a really aggressive form of the disease that can develop after long-term hormone therapy. When you look for it in biopsy patients, we see this in about 15% of patients. So not everyone, but is a harbinger of more aggressive disease. And we're really searching for better targets and treatments for this population of patients. This is a real high unmet need for us. And DLL3 is a promising target that's expressed in about 3/4 of these neuroendocrine cancers. And there are bispecific T cell engagers that are really trying to block this protein and really cause the immune cells to attack. One such T cell engager, tarlatamab, actually just got FDA approval for small cell lung cancer, which is an analogous cancer type in lung cancer. And we're really very actively investigating this in neuroendocrine prostate cancer and other neuroendocrine cancers as well. And then I'll just talk a little bit about radioligand therapy. And Ivan touched upon this, you know, some of the limitations of lutetium. It's a very effective treatment, but maybe we want to see more deep, more durable responses. So what about other isotopes? Actinium-225 is an alpha particle emitting isotope. These are heavier particles. They can kill a cancer cell with just one or two particles, as opposed to hundreds or thousands of beta particles with lutetium. This is a retrospective study that was published in Lancet Oncology last year, but really makes the point that after lutetium, you can give actinium-225 targeting PSMA and get really nice responses in patients that are quite heavily pretreated. So a whole bunch of more work going on with actinium. There's lead-212, that might be a more efficient and easier way to obtain particles that have alpha particle emission, and then different targets. So going beyond PSMA, looking at DLL3, CD46, HK2 or KLK2, there's been data presented there and a whole host of more that are in clinical development. And just in the last part of my talk, just going to talk about that androgen receptor signaling. So testosterone receptor or androgen receptor, how can we block this further? Well, maybe we could just develop drugs that degrade the protein within the cancer cell. So rather than blocking a hormone from binding to the receptor, can we just degrade the protein altogether? There are multiple phase 3 trials underway really testing that class of therapy. We're quite interested to see those results. It may be that there's certain subsets of patients based on their genetic profile in the tumor that respond best to that type of drug. Can we block androgen production even more potently than abiraterone does? There are this class of drugs called CYP11 inhibitors. It's like even further upstream blockade of androgen synthesis. And there are phase 3 trials underway with this class of drugs as well. And then there's a whole host of drugs that are what we call epigenetic modifiers. They turn what genes are turned on or off. Probably not that effective in isolation, but when you combine them with an androgen receptor pathway inhibitor like abiraterone or enzalutamide, you really might see a pretty potent effect. And there's a drug called mevrometostat that's in multiple phase 3 studies. We'll see how those studies read out. So with that, I just want to say thank you. This is just kind of a high-level survey. There's so much out there, and I think we're really excited to see our outcomes continue to improve in advanced prostate cancer.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.